Nation is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Thursday, December 17th, 2015. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Well, not so beautiful today. Rainy, cloudy, ugly.
Ugh. Lake effect snow warning.
Coming. It's coming tomorrow.
Just a dust, though. It won't be a white Christmas here.
Folks, we're heard live every weeknight, Monday through Friday, from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Proud to be a part of the network. We're also simulcast on Blog Talk. You can watch us live on our YouTube channel. Look right there. There it is, right there. You can watch us. Links to each audio-video broadcasting venue can be found at our home base on HagmanandHagman.com. That's HagmanandHagman.com. I'm Doug Hagman, of course. To my right is Joe Hagman. Together, to your left. Yeah. Yeah, that's my son, fellow investigator researcher Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report, what I'd like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Now, we dig into topics captured corporate mass media won't, the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Of course, they won't do and will never do. And many people adhere to the coincidence theory of history, geopolitical affairs. We don't. Of course, we don't. We, in fact, get into the conspiratorial aspect. And, you know, people say, oh, there's no conspiracy here. Well, you know, check the definition, legal definition of conspiracy. And anytime any two people get together for creating an event or a series of events, of course, that's purely defined as conspiracy. And ask a lot of people in prison if you want to know. Joe, it's great to have you. We got a lot to cover tonight. It's just Joe and I tonight. Just Joe and I tonight. And Eric, of course, manning the board. And Todd, of course, manning the satellite. I'm not sure exactly how he does that. It's going to be a long string. long tether.
It's going to be a good show. We got some news, current events, updates on relevant stories. But we also have other things we're going to cover that are... won't find in the headlines. From Nazis to the just complete destruction of this country, just waiting to hear the bang from the fall.
It's coming, folks. You know, I mean, there's so many things going on right now, isn't it? I mean, really, so many things that we can take a look at and say, wow. You know, we're really into it right now, and of course, everyone's asking, when is this event, or you know, when are we going to crash? Well, we're in the crash. We're in the spiral downward right now. If you can't see it, I just want to say, go away. All right, is that a bad thing to say? Just go away. You know what?
Russ said it best. You know, you're in a car, and you're driving towards the cliff, and the car goes off the cliff, which is where we are right now in the car. Already off the cliff. We just haven't hit bottom yet.
That's right. You know, and look, folks, you've been watching Gold and Silver. No, I don't watch it because I have any. Okay, I watch it because it's an indicator. And yesterday I don't know why I tuned into this. I mean, I watch it kind of in the larger, in the macro sense, not the micro sense, but boy, Gold and Silver jumped up very sharply yesterday. It was on the graph, it looked like a really big spike, but you know, of course, that, you know, $15 for gold, and I think, I don't know what it was for silver, but indicators. These are indicators of our financial health, not of anything else. I mean, that's that, and of course, you've got Yellen talking about a rate increase, right? And you know, and people don't understand how close we are. Or how tenuous, most people don't understand how tenuous the economy is. And everyone's saying, well, when's it going to crash? Well, we're in a crash. And right now, basically, we are, they're holding it together until they stop holding it together. When they stop, then they can sink it. And don't forget, the CIA, our CIA, well, no. Yes. Yes. They have got the controls into the stock market. So they can cause it to go up or down, or, I mean, through high-frequency trading. It's the CIA itself, and this from Chip Tatum, who should know, right? I just want to make sure that, that was the CIA. I didn't want to make sure it wasn't the Secret Service, or was it the Secret Service, that when he was talking about that, Joe? Do you remember? Let me just double-check something here. It's the Secret Service. Well, elements within the Secret Service, the entities within there, which more precisely, okay, being under the auspices of DHS, it would be the Secret Service or elements within the Secret Service, which to me, that's why it didn't make sense to me initially, how they could have controls. Why would they have controls? But formerly of the Treasury, now brought under DHS, they've got the specific controls where they can actually raise and lower the interest rates. Or not interest rates, but the volume, and control the stock market. So a lot of stuff going on, Joe. Now, I asked Joe if I could touch on this. Tomorrow night, Ted Brewer is going to be on, right?
Yes, he is. He will be with us for the whole show. And let me open my email here. I don't know if he sent anything specific.
Well, yeah,
I talked to him today.
I talked to him for a while today. You know, one of the most popular shows that we did together was the last one about transhumanism, or the last show about transhumanism, and that got a lot of really good reviews. Well, we're going to continue that conversation tomorrow with Ted Brewer, transhumanism, and talking about how quickly we are going down the path, which dovetails into your research.
Yes.
About the Mark of the Beast and you know, chip technology.
Yeah, there's a new...
What was that? Did you hear that, folks? Yeah, Eric over there. You know, hiccup.
All there's right. Some new info out that we're going to cover tomorrow with Ted. We have a transatlantic health IT cooperation roadmap.
Yep.
Memorandum of understanding between the government of the United States of America and the World Health Organization regarding cooperation for global health security initiatives, health IT. And we have the new Federal Health IT Strategic Plan 2015-2020, Collect, Use, and Share, where in this, just real briefly, it talks about how they're going to, the strategies and the goals and objectives on collecting your health information, and that it will get to the point where, when it's implemented, you will not be able to go to a dentist, a pharmacy, a mental health clinic, unless you become part of this healthcare system.
Uh-huh.
And it is a healthcare system based on health IT, or health information technology, which is basically the RFID components, the mobile wearable tech. You know, you see it with pacemakers today, but you see the different classes. You have class 1, class 2, class 3. And class 2 is an RFID chip for patient identification and health information. And that's what we are dealing with.
Right.
And just one quick quote from the... this is the... High Tech Act, excerpt from the High Tech Act. It says the following, and it pertains to how Americans will be, what will be required of Americans when they implement this. And just real quick, it says that the NIST and every government agency, federal agency, is pretty much a part of this. And they say that the national coordinator will publish resources required annually to reach the goal of utilization of an electronic health record for every person in the United States.
That's right.
Every person in the United States. No exemptions.
Well, some exemptions. You know, if you're the power elite, of course.
Right. But yeah. You have to get, you know... You have to go through this whole process and write letters to, you know, the agencies and get the clearances. And,
Exactly.
And it's deeper than that, because it gets into what they deem as behavior monitoring, and what they're going to do through the electronic health records is not only collect and share your information with other agencies, other corporations, and other countries, non-governmental organizations, and international governmental organizations, but this encompasses electronic records. It encompasses just about every activity you do, all your behaviors, all your tendencies, your activities. It runs the gamut from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to sleep at night, what you do, what you ingest, and how you do it.
So, no more gummy worms.
And they say
for you.
They're going to be enabling the smooth and easy, seamless transition as the individual moves between new healthcare system, erasing the boundaries of what occurs inside and outside of the healthcare system, to a all-encompassing strategy where there will be a shared management of healthcare. Shared meaning the patients, us, the American citizens, have to do our fair share. Well, the government will do their fair share. Our fair share is submitting to their collection tactics, and their fair share is collecting the information and using it the best way they can to further destroy us and divide us.
Right.
And it's an international plan.
And we're going to dedicate, Ted Rohrer is going to be talking about some of this tomorrow night, but we're going to be dedicating a show to this.
Yeah, and if I can say one more thing about this stuff, from the reading I've been doing the last week on this, I am more and more concerned than I ever have been about a bioweapon release somewhere in the world or the U.S., because they talk about this like it is
a done deal.
Yep.
Yeah. And pay attention to that, okay? Because and Ted Brewer and I were talking about this today too. The agenda is depopulation, and I was talking to Nathan Leal last night for a while. God bless that man. let me tell you something. He's full of information, and he's really on top of things. Watchman'sCry.com, and he was talking about the depopulation angle as well.
And a clip from Ted Brewer from our show about a year ago. Yep. Medical martial law.
Exactly.
I didn't really think, of all the different ways that our society could end up in a situation like that, the medical side was one of the least on my list of probabilities. Now it's up there.
Yeah. Folks, and Joe's allowed me to do this, and Eric gave me a thumbs up as well, so I guess I'm going to do this. If you don't mind, class is in session. The Hagman and Hagman University is going to get started here. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, really. I do. I do. It's but what we've done is we put together some research, and everyone talks about what's going on right now with ISIS. ISIS. Now, we understand what ISIS is. I was talking to Nathan about this last night, and I gave him my research findings. Now, my research findings are based on a number of books, and I'm going to be citing heavily from books like The Hitler Legacy, Peter Lavenda, author, Ratlines, Peter Lavenda, author, and Sinister Forces, Peter Lavenda, author. I'm going to be citing from Empire Beneath the Ice, how the Nazis won World War II. Steve Quayle, author. I'll be citing from other works as well, seated and spread out throughout the libraries. Some documents that have been declassified by the FBI recently. When I say recently, I'm talking about 2014. I'll be citing from those as well. Those are going to be really just at the periphery of what I'm talking about, because those need some time. We need a three-hour show from start to finish, in all 3 hours, to really talk about what's going on with the FBI releases of declassified documents that relate to the Nazi ideology. But here's, folks, here's what I want to tell you about what's going on right now. What's going on right now, because you can turn into any show out there, and I don't care if it's the alternative media or if it's the mainstream media, you can turn into any show out there. And they're going to talk about ISIS. They're going to talk about Islamic terrorism. They're going to talk about this global jihad. They're going to talk about jihad as if they know the background. And, you know, look, I didn't know the background either until I started digging and digging and digging and digging. And I said digging many times because right now I've got about 200 hours, roughly, I estimate, of research into this. And now what's happening today now makes sense to us. I mean, it makes sense to me and makes sense to us here at the Hagman offices. What's going on in the Middle East now makes sense. What's going on in the politics of America makes sense. From the operation, and people in the media, alternative media, talk about Operation Paperclip and bringing the Nazis in, and right? I mean, we all know that, don't we? We can all just, that's it. But wait a second. Hold the phone. What's the backstory behind all of this? Okay? Did you know that Nazism and Islam are interwoven here? And you might say, yes, I know that. Well, maybe not to the detail and the level that you need to know, because in order to understand what's taking place right now, you need to understand history. And you might think this is boring, but just bear with me, because after my presentation here, and I'm going to be trying to be as quick as possible, been concise. But after my presentation, you're going to say, "Oh yeah, okay, now I see how this happened. Now I see Operation Paperclip in the proper context." I'm not saying it's good. Now I can understand why swastikas are being painted on Jewish synagogues. Now I understand why Muslims are PO'd. Okay,
the swastika is a symbol that predates Nazism.
Right.
It is something that has been around. And
were you a bad boy?
It's been around for a long time.
Okay. Thanks. Just got handed a note.
I don't even. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You might as well have written this in German.
No, I get it.
Okay.
Okay.
That's for the phones. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're gonna be taking calls later on this show. But folks, what do you think about this? About this presentation? About this? Do you think it's important? I mean, I don't know. Who am I asking? Yeah. Okay. Thanks. All right.
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. It's historically important. One, two. We're seeming to be living through parallels from Nazi Germany to America today. Scary parallels. We have the root of Nazism, where it came from, why it was established, what happened to it.
Yep.
And why it's important today.
You know, yeah, because everything we're seeing happen today has a cause of origin back in the early 20th century, and we really have to understand. We need to understand this so we can talk and really present ourselves with an intellectual affirmation. Intellectual affirmation and understand the spiritual war that's being waged right now. Consider this, folks. Between 1933 and 1941, there were at least 120 anti-Jewish groups that were founded right here in the United States. All right. Now think about this.
You said between
1933 and 1941, there were at least 120 anti-Semitic groups that were founded right here in the United States, and that figure excludes most of the ethnic fascist movements. All right. That does not include the Nazi movements. That's just non-Nazi movements. All right. The source of that is Hoods and Shirts by Philip Jenkins, 1997, is the publication date. Anyone stickler on citations? There you go. All right. And so to set this up, those people who are watching on YouTube, Eric has some images I gave him earlier. They're kind of interesting. If you're listening to this, the images are not necessary. They're helpful. You can always go back to YouTube and check out the images. But if you're listening on Global Star Radio Network, or Blog Talk or whatever, that's fine. You're still going to get it. But when I make a reference to the images, you'll see it on YouTube. And hopefully this will make sense. But class is in session. Folks, take out your notebooks and no talking over there. No talking. Quit pulling her hair. I saw you. All right. Here we go. And again, this I already prefaced, you know, where my citations are heavily from. But we're engaged right now, or we're seeing the global jihad, the Muslims just rearing their ugly heads, ISIS being formed. And of course there's this anti-Semitic force right now going full gangbusters. There's also an anti-Christian force going gangbusters. Go ahead.
From the book Occult Occult Theology, it has a chapter on Orthodox Islam, and it gives a brief summary of the history. The Arabian Peninsula was the home of the nomads and mountaineers when, in the 7th century, Muhammad arose as a self-styled prophet and the creator of Islamism. The doctrine of Islam had three dogmas: monotheism, belief in the prophet, namely Muhammad, and the law of retribution.
Hey, he's cheating. All right.
Occult theocracy. I'm sorry, not occult theology. Occult theocracy.
All right.
But the Arabian Peninsula, 7th century, Prophet Muhammad.
Okay,
this is where Islam stems from.
Yeah,
he does not.
And a few, we're going to expand our show rules. Number one, on this show, let me just go over this again. Google is not a verb. Don't tell me you're going to Google something. All right, that makes me think, you know, you're gonna do something really, you know, to me. All right, don't Google anything. You search something. You don't Google it. Google is not a verb. That's rule number one. Rule number two is, if you're being really messed over, you're being corzined. Okay, so we can say we're being corzined. Actually, that's rule three. Rule two is, don't refer to Obama as the president. I don't believe he was elected president. I think he was selected president. And as far as I'm concerned, Obama, I'm not even sure who the guy is. So don't tell me we refer to Obama as the renegade. Renegade in chief, basically, because renegade is a reference to his Secret Service code name, which is appropriate, isn't it? Go ahead, sir.
Well, was there any correction to what I read?
Well, no, but
because I got
Prophet Muhammad. Oh yeah, Prophet Muhammad. Muhammad was not a prophet.
Right,
Muhammad was a pedophile. So if you want to say pedophile Muhammad, fine.
This was
Muhammad,
the
historical
history of this. Okay, but now the unorthodox Islam is a much bigger section in this book, where it talks about the connections to the Egyptian secret societies and the initiations of the Magi in the 7th century, and where...
But see, people, their eyes glaze over when you talk about that. I mean, I get that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But see, okay, now, forget about what happened in right now, because that doesn't matter. But that's good background, but that doesn't matter. See, here's what matters, because the present day matters. And I was talking to John Wells about this, J.B. Wells, on his show, and we caught some of that... I'm not sure it aired yet. And oh, by the way, I was supposed to mention, and I'll mention this, Steve Quayle was on Rick Wiles. Did Rick Wiles air? Is that? I'm not sure if it aired.
If he was on today, it already aired.
Yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah, then it should have aired.
Okay, all right. But no, what you referenced there, yeah, it's important. But see, people want to go back to the 7th century and say, see, Islam, this is the reason for all this jihad stuff. No. I mean, that happened, yes, but what we're seeing today is not because of the 7th century stuff, because you'll see these academic intellectuals on these forums, right, you know, type.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Can you hear that? I'm pretending to type. For those listening, I'm pretending to type, you know, saying, well, Islam, they've always fought against one another. Well, you know, the sects of Islam, Sunni and Shia, and the jihad's always been, you know, yeah, but not without help. Go ahead. Did you have something else you want to...
Well, just that it talks about Egypt's role in the creation of this movement, this caliphate, and it gets into some kind of dicey history here, but it is not as we understand it to be, the way it is told in the mainstream media, the way it is taught in schools, and even today. Not to get too far off topic, but you know, we can't have nativity scenes in certain counties of the country, and we can't have, you know, school plays singing Christmas songs. Well, how about at a holiday event at a school, parents were given a choice to sing Allah Akbar at a holiday event. And they did sing it, which was,
yeah,
just mind-boggling. And like I said, I don't like.
Well, all right, yeah. I mean, we're kind of thread drift here, or topic drift, I should say. Remember, but
this all has ties back to the Egyptian secret societies.
Yes,
it has links with Persia, and it has links in Gnosticism.
It does. Well, and it does go back to there. I don't know what made me think of Johnny Quest, Haji. Remember Johnny Quest? How many people are old enough to remember the cartoon Johnny Quest? Do you remember that? No, Eric? No. No one here is old. I guess you got to be as old as dirt. So, anyway. Yeah, Haji. Just remember this. Anyone named Haji, and Haji was a character in the cartoon Johnny Quest. That's a person who is attended the Hajj. So, when I give a reference to Haji, that's Johnny Quest, or that's a person who attended the Hajj. All right. So here's the deal, folks. Let's take this from the top right now. I told you the sources I'm citing from it, but let's look at the origins of where we're at today, why we're here, and because this is extremely important. As I mentioned, between 33 and 41, 120 anti-Jewish groups were founded right here in the United States. That does not include the Nazis. Now, if we go back into the all of the problems, I guess the best way to say this is all of what we're seeing today, both in the Middle East and in America, began in the beginning of the 20th century. Early 1900s. When you talk about the current state of political affairs, and I'm talking about what many on the left will, you hear many people on the left, the progressives, call Bush and Cheney and Nazis or neo-Nazis, right? Well,
yeah,
you know, that's not too far from the truth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's really not too far from the truth. But hold the phone. Okay, because the very same people, the progressives, the Marxists, who are calling them the Nazis, were a part of a parallel movement that is equally bad to the neo-Nazis. So, or the Nazi movement that they're referencing. So, you've got to understand the symbiotic relationship between these two and how these two groups, meaning the Nazis and the Marxists slash communists, how they have gone through the 20th century in order to understand our domestic current state of domestic affairs, as well as the geopolitics overseas, because we created, meaning we, the both sides of this political spectrum had created the situation over in the Middle East, which we're fighting today, and we're fighting this for a specific reason, and is being pushed to a specific end, and this is the class that's in session right now. So hopefully we're going to, folks, I don't know, again, hopefully you're going to find this relevant and interesting and play this back and share this with people. All right. So, let's go very, and I'm going to do this very quickly. Let's get back into, or let's go back into. Well, let me just see if I can. Well, let me just see where I want to start here, because we just burned a half an hour. All right. Awkward silence on the Global Star here, right? Okay.
Well, I mean.
All right, let's talk about the Nazism here, because Steve Quayle gets into this in the United States, and Steve Quayle gets into this, and where this came from. How many people remember the movie The Odessa File? This is based on the novelist or the novel of the same name by Frederick Forsyth. All right, that movie, the movie had what, John Voight, I guess it was, in it. He was a German journalist on the trail of post-war Nazi underground. Remember that? Well, folks, you need to think when you hear the alternative media, anyone in the alternative media talk about Operation Paperclip or any of these various operations, you got to get deep inside and understand what was propelling this, because it was a spiritual ideology straight out of the pits of hell. Okay. But it was a political ideology. Because, see, what I'm about to explain is how religion has been weaponized. And this is not something as old as the hills, as old as dirt, as old as rocks. No, this is something, this really happened in the 20th century. This is new. In fact, some of the people involved in this very issue are still alive and some still in power, or at least positions of power and influence. All right. So, go back to Odessa. When people, when you mention Operation Odessa, people think about this search for these Nazi war criminals. Okay, Israel, that whole concept. Odessa really began to come on America's radar and people's radar. It is a catch-all term for one of several groups. For any one of several groups of former SS officers and other assorted Nazi war criminals engaged in this secret society of murder and world domination. And we can go back and look at Argentine journalist and investigator Yuki Goni. Remember that journalist? Remember him? But beyond that, I'll tell you what, let me jump into this. Let me jump forward because we're running out of time. When we look at anti-Semitism here, in which really is behind everything here, behind this Islamic push, where's this coming from? When we look at anti-Christian or the anti-Christian sentiment by Muslims, where's this coming from? You might be surprised, folks, it's coming from within our own government. You might be surprised it's coming from within our own CIA. There's this anti-Semitism based on the notion of a conspiracy of world made up of Jews who control everything, the media, they control everything. They're Jews, they control everything. This is this notion of conspiracy of world Jewry, okay, which is responsible for the creation of the 120 plus anti-Semitic groups back in the early 20th century, between 33 and 41. It's not rooted in Islamic tradition. Okay, in other words, the Muslims didn't start this. It didn't begin there. It began in Europe. It began on European ideological models, the decisive transfer of this ideology. And there was this movement of this transfer of this anti-Semitic ideology. It took place between 1937 and 1945 under the impact of Nazi propaganda. Now, this is according to Matthias Kunzel, who wrote European Roots of Anti-Semitism in Current Islamic Thinking. The reason this is important is because this is behind a lot of, and this is what's tripping up a lot of alternative media right now, and this is behind a lot of the Muslim anti-Christian, anti-Jewish settlement. When you see the signs, and you'll see them mindlessly posted on internet forums and by internet journalists, so-called journalists or denizens of the internet who write columns and say Islam is evil. Yeah, that's true. And they'll hold up signs saying, you know, going against Jews or Jews, so Jews own everything and we need to get rid of the Jews. Well, but they don't explain why, where this started. It didn't start with the Muslims. It was infused, that ideology was infused into the Islamic mindset by the Europeans. Well, okay. And this is going to blow your mind, I think. Now, where did this begin? How did this start? Well, we are still fighting World War I. And I was talking to Nathan Leal on this. I ran this by him last night. He said, yeah, it's pretty good. It makes sense. We're starting World War I. And really, or we're fighting World War I. And we're actually in the second 100 years of World War I. The events right now in the Middle East, everything that takes place in the Middle East affects the peace and security of the entire world. Are we in agreement on that? I think we are. Despite that, isn't it odd that few of us know about how things happened in the Middle East? We know it's just a mess, but few people really understand the origins. We talk today of the Muslim Brotherhood. Everyone points to the Muslim Brotherhood. Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton, in terms of, you know, the State Department, the Muslim Brotherhood. We talk of the Israeli-Palestinian situation. We talk about the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan, Iran. We talk about Arab Spring. We talk about all of these things, but the origins are not rooted in recent events, nor are they rooted in 7th century Islam. No, they stem from a contemporaneous, or I shouldn't say contemporaneous, a contemporary, rather, more contemporary mindset. They stem from the Nazi influence and European influence. You know, we throw around the term jihad as if we know what it means and what it represents. Well, we do, at least the result, but what about the origin? We don't realize that it's really that the current contemporary phenomenon that we call this global jihad is what some, or what some journalists might call is jihadism or jihadists. You hear that all the time, right? Oh, jihadism, jihadists. Well, what do they mean? Where did it start? It didn't have its origins in the Middle East, but in Europe. It not from Muslims, but ready for this, but from Christians. this is not an indictment against Christians at all.
And I guess I was wrong. I thought it had something to do with assassins.
Okay. Well, you go back into the 7th century. Yes, assassins somewhat. But okay, no, more contemporary meaning is the concept of jihad. You see, people look at... While the concept of jihad... Maybe if I just go on here, I can explain this. While the concept of jihad is a religious struggle, is enshrined in Islam, okay? The political application, and folks, listen to this, is of global jihad is relatively recent. And as I said, it goes back to the First World War. At that time... Now, Eric, you can put up the map of Germany and Turkey, the Axis powers. Did I have that up there? I'm not sure if I did or not. Okay. All right. And folks, you can take a look at your screen. Germany and Turkey, the Axis powers, were allies against the British, the French, and the Russians. Now, during the period from October to November 1914, the German Kaiser, his representative in Turkey urged the Ottoman Caliph, Sultan Mehmed V, to declare a holy war or a jihad against that alliance, colonial alliance, meaning, well, the Russians, the British, and the French. So you had the German Kaiser, his representative in Turkey, went to the Ottoman Caliph, the guy in charge of the Ottoman Empire, the spiritual advisor. His name was Sultan Mehmed V. He urged him to declare a holy war or jihad against the British, the French, and the Russians. You follow me so far?
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. It was on November 12, 1914. Now, later, 2 days later, a fatwa by the Sheikh-ul-Islam, the leading spiritual authority within the empire, within the Ottoman Empire, just a few days later, on November 14th, a fatwa was issued. Now, this jihad was to encompass the entire world. The call went out to Muslims everywhere on the planet to rise up against the European colonizers and destroy them. Now, remember I said it was a Christian Christian origin. When I say Christian, perhaps I should say European Christian using Islam as a weapon. All right? Now, I'm getting into this. This was motivated purely by political motives, okay? This is purely political. So what you had, think of it this way. What did Zbigniew Brzezinski do in wanting to fight the Russians in Afghanistan? He tapped what? The Mujahideen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And said, look at the bad Russians. You gotta go after the Russians because they're going to come after you in Afghanistan. So,
and the Mujahideen did keep the Russians out of Afghanistan.
Correct. So think of the Brzezinski tactic back in 1914, because there's nothing new under the sun, and what we're seeing today is really a replay of the First World War, and Brzezinski copying that template, and of course the current power regime copying the template of both Brzezinski and World War One. So you understand that jihad, the fatwa during World War One, was not a religious, was not rooted in Islamic religious ideology, but it was used as a purely political motive. Germany was at war with the European powers of Great Britain, France, and Russia. Remember that. The proclamation of jihad and the accompanying fatwa specified that these nations are the enemies of Islam. What do we see today? Everybody is the, if you're not Muslim, if you're not a Muslim country, you're an enemy of Islam. While it is correct, and it is it's a correct statement, because Islam is not really a religion, it's a political ideology. But how did it get that way in the 20th century? Well, it got that way through this infusion of this political ideology into this the religious context. So, the proclamation of jihad and the fatwa specified that the nations mentioned, Germany, France, and Tsarist Russia, were enemies of Islam. Germany was a Christian nation. Germany was just as Christian as the countries named in the fatwa, but somehow Germany wasn't included in the fatwa. So you have to think about that. Because Germany was the one that was pushing the fatwa, yet the Muslims didn't turn on Germany. So why is that? Now, the history books really don't talk much about that. The religious sentiment was used by both political and religious leaders to incite revolt, jihad. Then we can look at this, going back to World War I, was a strategy, a means to an end, and that end was the elimination of the colonial powers from the Middle East. So all this is about the Middle East. If you see on your screen right there, you've got a picture of the Ottoman Empire, you've got a picture of the Russian Empire, you've got a picture of France and Spain, and the entire area of Great Britain. You see Germany at the epicenter called for, or tapped into the Muslims and said, look, we need you to fight this spiritual battle. Russia, France, UK, they're colonial powers, they're not Muslim, you need to have a jihad against these colonial powers. So, despite the fact that Germany was just in the same religious or, you know, non-Islamic state as Great Britain, France, and Russia, it didn't matter, because Germany was propelling, during World War I, the fatwa and the jihad against Great Britain, France, and Russia. At issue, or really at the ends, or this stratagem devised by the Germans and implemented by the Turks was done in order to control access to the oil fields of the Middle East and, of course, the Suez Canal. How important is the Suez Canal? Of course, very important. The intent was to get access away from Russia, France, Russia, France, and the UK. Now, there was this really was a carefully conceived attempt to unite this massively decentralized and disunited Arab area. Because remember, and this was a military campaign designed to stretch really from, and I'm not sure if you can see it, but from Tunisia to at that time, Persia to Afghanistan, encompassing all of what is now Saudi Arabia and what is referred to as the Levant. Remember ISIS and ISIL, the S meaning Syria, L for Levant. Well, at the time, the Levant was a section as delineated by, you know, in the map. The countries of Lebanon at the time, after subsequent to World War I, Palestine and Syria, and what is today the Kingdom of Jordan. Now, those familiar with the facts on the ground in this region at the time, they understood that it was not that Islam, the Arabs, they were not part of this tight-knit ethnic group. Now, Islam was not a monolithic faith with this central. You couldn't compare it to like Catholicism, for example, because they didn't have the Muslims did not have a pope or a head guy necessarily, or a cathedral. Instead, this region was, and today even somewhat is, populated and ruled by various factions and rivalries and cultural differences that are just as vast as, we'll say, the Russians and the Germans. So, you know,
you're talking about Mecca?
We're talking about the entirety of the Arab lands, okay? The 18th century fundamentalist Islamic revival of Wahhabism. Now, that's different because that found its supporters in the Arab tribes under bin Saud, of course, and bin Saud, he was at odds with the, of course, that's the Sunni movement. He was at odds with the Hashemite rulers of the Hejaz, the area. In fact, I'll just leave that alone. Because when you toss in the Kurds, for example, the Yazidis, you start to, I guess the point is this, you start to realize that the Arab Muslims are not this monolithic group of people with a single leader. No, they're disparate factions all over the place. Man, they're just all over. But what happened in World War One? You had the Kaiser, you had the German, the leader of Germany, tap the Turkish, the head of the Ottoman Empire, to create this fatwa for a jihad, a global jihad against UK, France, and Russia, or all colonial powers that were not Islam, except Germany. That's kind of the summation. Let me repeat that one more time. World War One, the German Kaiser tapped into the Turkish Sultan there and said, "Look, all these powers are coming against you. So what you need to do is you need to organize this global jihad against the infidel countries of Great Britain, France, and Russia, and really everyone else except us." And that's what they did. That's what they did. Well, at least that was the idea. See, the Ottoman Empire, they had a long string of humiliating defeats at the hands of colonial powers in the decades prior to the outbreak of the First World War. The Caliphate, remember, again, you got to go back to history, and this is not taught in history books, so somewhat cumbersome to talk about. The Caliphate had lost territories in what would be considered now Libya, especially North Africa. It had lost Libya to the Italians, and in fact, most of Egypt to the British. The Balkans, we hear about the Balkan Wars, 1912, 1913, lost the Balkans, the first and second Balkan Wars of 12 and 13, 1912 and 1913, respectively, which contributed directly to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, which started World War One, at least historically speaking, right? And he was assassinated by a Serbian nationalist. And that, of course, ignited the hot war for World War One. There was a military alliance with Germany. Well, anyway, a military alliance with Germany would give the empire, the Ottoman Empire, an opportunity to regain some semblance of this national unity, we'll say, getting back into power. So Germany tapped into the Arab nationalities in the Middle East. As disparate as they were and as disorganized as they were, they said, "Hey, look, guys, let's all get together, and you guys need to go for this global jihad against the colonial powers." While the war itself, and we look back at World War One, it proved disastrous for the Ottoman Empire. It led to the Ottoman Empire's collapse. The idea of jihad as a weapon that could be wielded by the non-Muslim Western powers is at the epicenter of this whole point. Folks, this is what happened. We learned, the United States learned, the Great Britain learned, and the intelligence agencies of all Western nations, including what is now Israel, learned, hey, we can harness the power of jihad. We can harness these Muslims. We can exploit the heck out of them. We can say, we can fire them up and turn them loose. We can foment the idea of jihad as a weapon that could be wielded by non-Muslim Western powers. We can do this. In other words, we as Westerners, or we as non-Muslim Western powers, we can use jihad as a weapon. And this is what's happening. Because Tsarist Russia, look what happened to Tsarist Russia. They fell to the Bolsheviks during the First World War. Well, just as Russia, Tsarist Russia, fell to the Bolsheviks during the war, there was this new enemy that was found to unite Western powers in Islam in a new common cause. So the fall of Russia and Tsarist Russia fell to the Bolsheviks during the war, really, there was a new enemy that was found, and that was communism. It was atheist, godless communism, which conveniently was considered an invention by the Jews. Why? Because during this time, they were told, the Muslims were told, that communism was invented, was created, and being facilitated by the Jews. Don't forget, it was during this time that you had the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, that was being, well, leading up to, or this time leading up to the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. But when you take this and couple this with the news that England and France were betraying this Arab revolt after England and France and Tsarist Russia, but specifically England and France said, you know, if you use jihad as a tool against the West and attack these countries and just do it all, really just global jihad, we're going to cut up and give you some land in the Middle East. We're going to give you the spoils of this jihad. The England and France basically were looked at as betraying the Arab revolt against the Axis nations, then Turkey and again England and France and Russia. They were betrayed, I mean, by dividing up the Middle East between them. In other words, the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which there were no Arab signatories, kind of left the Muslims out. And on the screen there is the Sykes-Picot Agreement in 1916, and it shows the ruling parts. It shows the homeland for European Jews in the Palestinian area, as set forth in the Balfour Declaration, to which there were no Arab signatories. So what you're looking on the screen, the Sykes-Picot Agreement that was developed in 1916, had no Arab signatories to it, as well as the Balfour Declaration, no Arab signatories to it, meant that the European powers were once again intent on colonizing the Middle East, and the nefarious Jews were behind it all. Now, of course, this is fiction. This is made up by this pre-Nazi ideology, but was cultivated in World War II within the Nazi ideology. Now, I didn't get to World War II, but see, this is leading up to World War II and Nazism. So all of what we're seeing today, the Crusaders, the cosmic struggle against the enemies of Islam, we'll say, was really refined during World War I. It was really refined at that time. It was solidified. It was refined to the extent that it was now a struggle between Islam and the Jews. And in fact, not just Islam and the Jews, but Islam, the Jews, and the allies of the Jews, the Christian Crusaders. This did not start in the 7th century as much as it did start in the early 20th century. So everything we're seeing today in the Middle East had its start in World War I, pre-World War I, World War I, and then was really keyed up in World War II with the Nazis. And this is where the Nazis, now you can think ahead, to those listening, you can think ahead and just throw out some names, Allen and John Foster Dulles, Prescott Bush, ringing any bells, Skull and Bones, Nazi groups, okay, 322, you know, Yale and so on. You see where World War One and what you see on the screen, the Sykes-Picot Agreement, and this the Muslims saying, "Hey, you guys really messed us up. You guys kind of screwed us." The Arabs, meaning the Arabs, the Muslims. You told us to wage global jihad, and you were going to give us the fruits of our spoils, and you didn't. The Germans were the German powers. During World War I were really the impetus behind this and the creation of what we now see as a global jihad operation. That's the beginning. That caused a lot of bad taste, and that really kind of united these Arab factions together against the Jews and the communists, and Jews and communism were synonymous.
Excellent first hour. We're going to get right back into it on the other side. Folks are listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Thursday, December 17th, 2015. Just me and my dad solo tonight, possibly taking calls on hour number 3, so stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.